Hello, everyone, and welcome to Kumandra, the neighboring country of Wakanda. I'm just joking. Welcome to another episode of Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. My name is Dino Ray Ramos.
I'm Amanda Nduka, and if you haven't seen Raya and the Last Dragon, you probably won't get that reference, but once you see it, you'll understand it. So for this episode, who do we have, Dino?
We have Kelly Marie Tran, who I don't know if they caught this in the recording, but I called her the Notorious KMT.
you like to give people nicknames.
Yeah. And then she was living for it.
Yeah, no, she's great. I mean, she's the star of Raya and the Last Dragon. It's on Disney Channel. I guess it's not
Disney Plus.
Disney Plus, and also going to be released in theaters. I think it's part of their premium.
How Mulan was released.
Yeah, it's kind of like guys, that. It is. This movie is definitely a must see. Dina, I saw you. You were tweeting like straight after you watched.
I tweeted, so I'm gonna be honest. I was watching it laying on my couch as you do during a pandemic. And there's parts where I just started to crying and I didn't even notice. I think Asian or not, I mean, it will speak to the Asian community, but how it speaks to universal the strength message. Of community.
It's definitely a universal film, universal message. Kelly is amazing, you guys.
Lovely. She's so
I know people are like, you guys always say everybody's amazing, but we have really dope guests on this podcast.
We're a GLAAD Media Award recipient, so yeah. We have to. And also, it's just, we make dreams come true, you know? and Kelly is just, I think, so delightful and so fun to talk to. We talk about Raya, obviously, and she's been through it with social media, and I'm glad, you know, we talked about that as well.
Yeah.
And she deserves all the things, to be honest with you. Right. And this movie, I think it's just a game changer in terms of another kind of representation movie, specifically for Southeast Asians, but the Asian community as well. And
yeah.
I loved it. I mean, come on. Yeah. I want to dress up as Raya.
Oh my gosh. We're about to see a whole bunch of Raya costumes.
a bunch of Raya cosplay. Namari, I think, is going to be a popular one too.
Yes.
Because...
And Sisu.
Oh my god, Sisu, yeah. Awkwafina.
Yeah, Awkwafina's character. Oh my gosh, you're going to love that dragon. It's literally her personality. It was genius how they put this together.
Kelly is great. We talk about a lot, so we're gonna stop talking and we're gonna let you listen to the episode with Kelly Marie Tran. Kelly Marie Tran, the Notorious KMT, thank you so
much. Oh, am I notorious?
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us here on Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. We've been following your career. We all have, and love to see it. Love to see all the success. Okay, and I want to say that I just watched Raya last night. I could not stop crying, and I feel like crying right now too, just because. Especially that ending. What the hell were they trying to do to us?
I know. Thank you for saying all those nice things, first of all. This movie is really special to me. It means a lot to me that it spoke to you.
But before we get into that, you know, on the podcast, we really love to talk about kind of origin stories, you know. Sure. No, I guess first, you know, where did you even get the urge, you know, to perform or be an actor? And, you know, going to that, I'll ask you the typical, you know, Asian parent story. Were your parents supportive? even like just immigrant family, because every time an immigrant family or second generation try to go into the arts or try to go into something that's not engineering. Where did you get that urge to act and kind of your family support and just kind of all immigrant families have, or children of immigrants have a similar story of people going into the arts. But can you just talk to you about your origin story and your desire to be an actor?
Yeah, of course. So yeah, I grew up in San Diego. My parents are both boat refugees from the Vietnam War. They came to America in 78 and both didn't really have, were sort of in their later teen years, early 20s. So they were sort of in this position where they didn't really have the ability to get an education. They had to immediately get jobs to support their younger siblings who also came over with them. Mm-hmm. So growing up, my parents, you know, saved every penny they had. We never really went on vacation. We never really, they never really bought new clothes for themselves. And they mm-hmm. saved all that money so that we could buy a house in a school district with really good schools, like good public schools. Mm-hmm. And they always emphasized from the very beginning the importance of education for someone's future. And I see it now, you know, as an adult looking back on this, I'm recognizing that so much of the things that they believed in and the ways they interacted with me were because they wanted my life to be better than theirs. Like, they didn't get to have education. So of course they wanted to advocate for education. Yeah. Of course they didn't understand when I said I wanted to pursue acting, because they came from a world where they didn't ever have the luxury of thinking about having a dream. Like, that is a privilege in itself. To sit in a position, you know, where you can sit in a place where you're like, oh, what's going to make me fulfilled? Like, the majority of the world doesn't get to think of what's going to make them fulfilled. So my parents, at a really young age, I started singing in church choir, I think when I was like in kindergarten. And then through school, I continued to sing. And then in high school, I got into musical theater, and that was sort of my first foray into acting. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted to pursue it, but I didn't know how. I didn't know anyone who had ever done that before. And because of that, it felt really impossible. And also, we can talk about how at the time, when I was that age, there was even less representation than there is now. Mm-hmm. And so I never saw anyone like myself doing the things that I wanted to do. So it just seemed insane. Mm-hmm. That coupled with the idea that my parents, you know, don't want to like perpetuate a stereotype, but they definitely wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer. Yeah.
That's kind of the same thing.
We always talk about that on this podcast. Like, my parents wanted me, they still to this day ask me, like, when am I going to med school? Like, it's not too late to apply. And I'm just
right?
Like,
same, yeah. They're like, so like, this hobby is like cute and everything. Yeah.
That was right. And then, like, even like with journalism, it was just like, like my parents were like, oh, okay, so what's the fallback?
Kelly, you mentioned this before, but I want to ask you, when was the first time that you can recall feeling seen or feeling represented on screen?
I've been talking about this movie a lot, but honestly, it's probably Mulan, the animated film. Mm. I think that was one of the first times, because it came out in 1998 and I was born in 89, so I was not even 10. And that was the first time I felt like, oh, there's like a princess that looks like me. And I don't think as kids, you know, we're living in a world now where we have all the shared vocabulary. We know what we mean when we're saying like representation in media. We know what we're saying when we're talking about what being triggered is. We know all these words. We didn't have those words when I was a kid.
Right.
And so I think I had this desire to see myself represented, but I didn't even know how to put that into words. Like, I didn't even know what that feeling was. Mm-hmm. And then to then see that movie, that movie was one of my favorites, I think, for that reason.
I mean, I'm so glad you mentioned that. You know, I remember seeing Mulan coming out for the first time, and I wasn't as connected with my Asian heritage as I am now, but there's like kind of this inherent, you're just like excited, you're just like, oh, this is different, you know, because honestly, I was so used to just seeing the dominant culture, i.e. white culture, on TV. And when you see yourself, you're like, oh, I feel weird, but in a good way.
Right? It's like, wait, I didn't know other people knew that. Like, it's really, it's like a really like fun experience when you see people that like have like commonalities with you and they're on TV. Yeah, definitely. But I was born in 88. So I know back, I didn't really get.
Well, when I was watching Raya last night, I kept on thinking to myself, I was like, I'm so jealous of this new generation, you know?
They don't even know.
And I was just like, this must
have... You know what we had? Sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was just like, oh, is this how white people feel all the time? I was just like, because I was just like, if I had this as a kid, if I knew that someone, because obviously Raya is an amalgamation of a lot of Southeast Asian cultures. And I see Filipino in it, I see Vietnamese, I see Thai, I see all of this. And I'm all, oh my God, I feel so seen. But then at the same time, I was like, oh, wait a second. Could this have been happening all this time in my 49 years of living?
Like, who would I be right now if this came out in 1994 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
I know, right?
But yeah, like, so like navigating through your career, you know, how just has even like going to Milan, you know, and you're kind of seeing yourself, how has your own identity informed your own choices and kind of even just the agency that you have on your career?
Huge. I mean, I think that, you know, the absolute first thing I think about as I'm reading a script and as I'm considering a project is, one, is this somehow going to perpetuate a stereotype about the group of people that, you know, people see me representing? And that is one of the biggest criteria for me. I never want to feel like I'm perpetuating a negative stereotype or continuing to support some sort of like huge generalization about any group of people. I think that is really important to me. The second thing is it a story that is going to make me a better person? Am I going to get out of playing this character and feel changed or feel different in a way that I wouldn't have been if I didn't? Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I never thought coming into this that I would ever be in a position where I could say no to anything. You know, I was very much not even, you know, I started, Jedi came out in 2017. And before that, I was working a day job and hopefully booking one commercial every 2 years, you know? Mm-hmm. It was a very, very different world. And so I went from this place of scarcity to going to this place of now being in a position where I can really look at what kind of legacy I want to leave behind. Mm. And I sort of recognize the privilege that I have, but I also recognize how important it is for me to be thoughtful because I have that privilege. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
that's great. Mina, I think, and now we have Raya and The Last Dragon. And ever since the announcement of this movie, you know, especially with the Asian community, and I want to say this out loud. I tweeted this and I was just like, oh, I hope Kumanda and Wakanda are neighboring countries because they should be.
Yes. Wouldn't that be amazing though? Like,
like just neighboring country, because I could see it. I could see, because I tweeted it, and then there's a picture of Raya kind of overlooking Hart or Kumanda, and then you have Black Panther and him overlooking Wakanda. And I was all, this could happen. Anyways.
I love that. Pitch it to Disney.
Oh my God, right. Black Panther and Raya crossover, that's what we need. But you know, when you first read Raya, what was your initial reaction?
I've never had an experience before where I walked into the room and I was given the sides or whatever scene I was reading, and I looked at it and I recognized immediately different words, and I recognized immediately references to my culture, and it was absolutely overwhelming. I think I journaled about it because I was like, this is a big moment. Mm-hmm. And it was that moment felt like what you were saying before. You're like, is this what it feels like for white people always? Like, is that- I was like, because for me, it feels like, man, I'm like a 30-year-old adult and I'm barely able to hold it together feeling this right now. It's so rare, so rare. But yeah, I think too, you know, not just with Raya, but with Namari and with Sisu and all of these other characters in this movie. There's so many cool characters, and
they're every all- one of yeah. them. I love
the cast: Sandra Oh, Daniel Day,
yes.
Awkwafina, of course, Awkwafina. And Gemma Chan. I'm not gonna lie. Namari is working it. Like, she works. But yeah. Raya is like, they have their different styles, you know, but I want to say Namari is working that haircut.
I've said this many times. One of my favorite lines in the movie is when I refer to Namari as Princess Undercut. That's one of my favorite. That's <Yes. right. laughs>
Yeah. So seeing how you know this character is an amalgamation of you know, like Dino said, different South Asian cultures. How much of yourself did you inject into this character, would you say? Like how did you, and were there things about her that you just immediately connected with, like qualities about her that you immediately connected with when you first read her?
Yeah, absolutely. So much of Raya felt like she was already inside of me, which sounds really, really strange and weird. But there are a lot of moments in recording where I felt really connected to the circumstances in which she found herself in. And one of those moments, I think, was the prayer moment where she is sort of at her last effort. She feels like she has been traveling for 6 years to do this thing that she's not even sure will pay off. And she's so desperate in that moment. And I remember that being one of the moments where I really felt like, okay, I've been here before. Mm-hmm. And I want to authentically capture what it was like to be here. And Don and Carlos, who directed this movie, they're amazing. And they were really wonderful about cultivating a space for their actors where it felt like we could just go off script and we could improvise and we can inject ourselves into these characters. And for me, that was a moment where we were able to improvise a lot of that scene in the room, and it made it into the movie, which I think is just so special and incredible. Mm-hmm. But yeah, lots of scenes, and I think lots of moments and lots of parts of this character I feel are inside of me. And I don't think that I can really, I don't know if I can tell them apart sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, the film has so many, I mean, obviously you can't help but pick out the relevant themes that this film holds with our current, I guess, climate, if you want to say. First of all, what was your reaction when you first saw the film in its entirety? And what do you hope audiences will take away from it?
My first reaction after seeing that ending was absolutely just like crying a lot.
Yep. I was on the couch.
Yeah.
I was just like, why? Why are we doing this?
These are animated characters. Yes. Why are we doing so much right now?
I mean, I don't want to ruin it I want to talk about it. I mean,
yeah.
What happens with that group at the end? I was just like, oh, my God, I was just like this.
I think we can talk about it in a general sense. I mean,
yeah.
Amanda, when you were asking about like what I want audiences to take away, I think the answer is that it's the same thing that I want to take away from this experience. And that is the idea that despite the world being so divided and being so broken and feeling like every day you're reading something in the news or hearing a story about how broken it is, I think this movie does a really good job of reminding, at least for me, reminding me that deep down in my heart and in my soul, I want to believe there's a world better than the one that we're living in. Mm. And maybe if I'm brave enough to take a step towards fighting for that world, even knowing that I'm not sure if it can even exist, that is one of the bravest, most courageous things a person can do. Mm. It's something I want to take away. from this movie, and I hope that people take that away too.
I mean, also, you know, the film is just so striking, like, and also the fight scenes, I guess, between you and Gemma.
Yes.
I mean, those were intense. I mean, did you have to like reenact anything?
Yeah, I always wonder, like, whenever voice actors, because when you see like the animations being all like, you know, super animated and big, I wonder how the voice actors are looking at that point.
Yeah, like did the animators?
I wonder how Kelly delivered this, like.
Yeah, because I honestly could see some of your facial expressions, like even all the actors, and like even Awkwafina as, you know, Zizou. It's that is like Robin Williams genie level fun and heart.
So good. Yeah.
Like what she did with that. And then like what you did with Raya is like, I saw my sister and you, like, she looked like my sister. Like, you look like my sister. Not you, but you know what I mean? but, so, like, did, like, how, in terms of physicality of this, of an animated role, like, I'm always curious, like, did you have to work with animators, or, like, did you do facial exercises? I don't know.
Yeah, how do you prepare?
Yeah.
Yeah, so every session that we're recording is, like, recorded by a camera so that the animators can see what we're doing with our faces and our bodies. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is I did not have to do any of those stunts. I would have loved to do them. I would have loved to learn how to do them. It is really awkward when you're doing a fight scene because it's a lot of grunting. And
so you just, was there just a session where you just were like, now grunt?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and you don't have the animation in front of you, so you're not seeing like what these characters are doing. So yeah, there were tons of times where I would just pretend to be fighting someone and just like let the sounds come out of my body, which was really fun and interesting. But yeah, in terms of what or how we got to capture a lot of people's facial expressions, that all of that credit goes to the animation team and the character teams and just the people building this movie together. I mean, at one point, because we're in COVID, there were over 450 people working from their own homes in different places to make what you saw. So yeah, the ability to capture Awkwafina's essence and Daniel Day-Kim's essence and all of these like such recognizable iconic actors like in our community, I give all that credit to the animation team, truly. Yeah, it's just from watching the tapes of us.
Yeah, like even like that one point where you see Raya getting really angry, I felt her rage. I was just like, oh, she about to go off. Like. Because like, she was like heaving and I was just like, oh, and then she was like kind of storming, you know, the going after Namari. And I was just like, oh my God, I feel it. I feel that she is like genuinely pissed.
Yeah. And also let's talk about that for a moment. One of my favorite moments in the movie, because it's one of the only times I remember watching Disney animated movies, like growing up, I don't think I've ever seen a character allowed to be that angry.
I haven't either, unless it's a villain, but you know, yeah.
Justifiably angry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just made me feel so good that we're bringing this character in the world, this woman who gets to be sad and vulnerable and funny and witty and sarcastic and brave and courageous and angry.
Yeah.
Like, to be able to, you know, as a kid, see that entire trajectory and someone who's experiencing the wealth of human emotion, like that's a really, really powerful thing. Yeah, and then to see her recognize that she's being blinded by her own anger and the only thing that takes her out of it is recognizing her community and seeing her friends. It's just so emotional. I'm like getting
emotional. It is.
It's very emotional. Yeah, so I'm saying you can't help but just draw the parallels. Like this is a film that we need to see, you know?
Yeah.
It's a film that we need.
It's like, you know, the timing is so eerie in this way. Because it comes at a time when the Asian and Asian American community are under attack and they're being violently attacked and we're scared for our parents, mostly for, you know, I'm scared for my parents in the Bay Area, wondering like if they go to Safeway, if they're gonna get attacked just for being the way they look. But how do you hope Raya and the representation of Asian culture create unity among the Asian community, which is super siloed? And also kind of serves this call to action to allies.
Yeah, it's crazy because, you know, making a movie like this takes years and years and years. There's no way in the world that you could really predict what would be happening in the current world when your movie releases, if that makes sense. So the fact that all of these things are happening at the same time as this movie comes out, to me, feels like a sign from the universe or something, knowing that so many people are feeling so rightfully upset and justifiably angry because of it feels like a constant barrage of injustices happening in the world. And then to be able to have something like this, celebrates Ram at the same time and is a moment that can be a moment of celebration and a moment of joy. And I think all of us sitting here can recognize that sometimes in a world that is constantly attacking you and making you feel like you don't belong, feeling joy and being proud is an act of rebellion. And I'm really, really happy that this movie happens to coincide with a time where I think a lot of people are feeling afraid and feeling rightfully angry. And I hope that this can bring a little bit of joy into recognizing that our community has something to celebrate at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was like, there was a, I don't know the exact moment, but you know, I am gonna spoiler alert, you know, just like at the end, what Raya does and kind of just is like kind of this whole narrative of being the better person, being above hate and being above. And I think I wanna say that maybe even every marginalized community, whether it be Black, Asian, Latino, even disabled and queer community, we are all in a way divided, but especially within the Asian community. And just to see these kind of sects like from Kumandra kind of come together and what it represents, that's what got me. Like, I was just like, when I watched that ending, I was like, this is like really creepy, because this is what we need. This is what the Asian community needs. This is what the community as a whole needs, because I was just like, how did Disney know this was gonna happen? Or like, how did they know that this is what we're gonna need at this time?
Yeah, no, I I agree. Like, just the, that's the one thing that I wanna take away from this experience, and the one thing that I hope people take away from it. To quote Michelle Obama, you know, when they go low, we go high. Like, it really is sort of that same mentality of like, oh man, if we can just step out of ourselves for 1 minute and think about the bigger picture and think about the kind of world that we want to live in, can we take our own like self-interest out of that and then work for the greater good, even if it seems so impossible? Yeah, it really hits you hard.
Yeah, no, that's what it was. It's definitely, like I said, it's a must-see movie. It's so timely, and it can apply to, like I said, like you said, Dino, anybody right now. Like, we are so divided, and we need to figure out what that is and how to sort of come back together. So this movie really did serve that, and I'm really glad. And also you, Kelly, I know throughout your career, you also sort of embodied this we go high quote. You know, I read your New York Times piece.
Oh God, yes. Yeah,
and it was just like, I was like, this girl is so brave. Like, you could have just retreated and you know, turned, but you literally stood up to people that were being racist and were saying really like bad things to you. So I really commend you for that. And I'm glad that we get to, like, people like my little cousins and little get to have somebody like you to look up to.
Yeah, it's like what you did, and like, because there's so much trash out there, let's just be honest.
And a lot of trash.
And oftentimes a lot of people in the margins are taught to say, just take it because it's not worth fighting.
Right.
You were just like, you know what? No. You know, just like, it's like, it's kind of like shake the table. It's no more, you know, we can't just kind of keep our heads down and
yeah. Thank you for saying that. That means a lot to me. And I think that what's crazy about this time is, you know, I think what we're really recognizing for the first time is that just because something happens a lot doesn't mean that we should normalize it. It doesn't mean that we should be okay with it. And it doesn't mean that we have to take it. That was a big lesson for me, because, you know, I had all these voices telling me like, don't leave the internet because you can have brand partnerships. And in my head, I'm like, I'm not here to sell flat tummy tea, but okay. And then there's, you know, people saying like, well, that just happens with everyone. That's just how it is. And I'm like, yeah, but that's, I'm not okay with that. Like,
yeah.
That's how it should be. And I recognize that there are good things about social media, like, especially, you know, going back to just bringing attention to the horrific attacks on the Asian community. That was something that social media with. But same, there's something for me personally, I think everyone needs to make their own personal decisions, but I'm really grateful for my own mental health that I was able to just show up for myself in that way.
It's powerful.
Yeah, I think also it kind of just shows kind of the strength of like how the Asian community or just everyone came behind you, you know, and like kind of just like got your back. And again, kind of showing this story of community and the need for community.
Yes. Because
I think that's where it starts, right? We can't just fight something that's totally trash and irrehensible, you know, without having the foundation of a strong community to have your back. Yeah. And I think that like, that is what, I mean, cheesy or not, you know, it's like, that's what Raya taught me.
I was gonna say, that's what Raya is all about. Like,
It's true. I absolutely see her arc as someone who doesn't trust anyone and who's afraid to have community, and then going to a place where she has this community that ends up saving her. Like, even just by when she's in that place where she's really angry and she's blinded by her anger, and just seeing, just looking at her friends, and that taps her out of it immediately.
Mm-mm.
Like, oh, yeah.
And also the movie passes the Bechdel test. Let's just put that in there.
Let's put that in there.
Love to see it.
They don't need no man. They don't need no partner. They're just themselves. I'm just saying that because I'm also single. So if anyone else.
Oh my goodness.
It kind of just validates my singledom.
Kelly, so obviously Raya and the Last Dragon comes out March 5th. What's next for you? What can you tell us?
And we're deadline, so we could break news right now.
Listen, I do have a few things that I'm not allowed to talk about, but I will say just in general, in terms of where my career is going and what I want it to look like. Mm-hmm. I really want to just keep doing things that scare me. And I think that thus far that has really served me well. And I think, like you guys said, you know, I am really grateful that I've had a community that has sort of helped me through this entire process. I was horrified of being seen again, you know, but I've been really well supported, and I'm really, really grateful to continue to work in this world. And I hope to keep telling powerful stories, and I hope to keep breaking barriers, and I hope to also open doors for other people. So
yes, come on, Rose Tico spinoff on Disney Plus. Let's do it. Let's do it, guys. And if you need an executive producer, I'm available. No, I'm just joking.
You know,
look at me. I'm just being trash and holding myself out. I'm sorry, guys.
I love it.
we like to end our podcast, Kelly, with one question we ask everyone. You know, is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, in film and TV, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream, or that kind of just doesn't get enough shine, that you think people need to know about? I mean, if you have a long list, let us know, but you know, if there's, you know, feel free to shout people out.
I have so many, but the one person that has been on the top of my mind lately is this director named Issa Lopez. Do you know her?
No.
Oh my God, she's incredible. She did this movie called Tigers Are Not Afraid.
Yes. I know the movie. Okay, yeah.
She is, that movie just is one of my favorite movies and just stays with me. And the way that she's able to capture the tumultuousness of war, in addition to having it be a movie filled with magic, is just incredible. So I think that if she's not already doing like incredible huge things, I think she will be in the next few years or so. So yeah.
Yes. Kelly Marie Tran, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for making us cry.
Yes. go see Raya out March 5th.
Yes. Thank you so much, Kelly.